Chapter 84. The Sultan's Slave and a Greek Goddess. Sidney Gryce brought out his modern mechanical pencil, which it was perfectly in order for him to use, and demonstrated his point. I thought it odd when I asked Miss Bocking how the attacker had carved his symbol, and she told me, he swung the pencil towards me as my cue, in the same way as he beat me, I quoted, to finish his sentence, slowly and deliberately. And yet, my guardian lowered his pencil, in every case we have seen, Mistresses Hockaday and Bocking and Lady Brockwood, the X was wanting its upper right arm. And Lucy said that he had cut both lines downwards, I recalled. If you were drawing an X carelessly, it would be the end of your stroke that would be missing, not the start.
Precisely.
I paced back to the window and looked out. The boy was still performing, and still being ignored. But if Lucy's attacker had been castrated, I reasoned, surely, and I am sorry I cannot think of a more delicate way of phrasing this, he would not have been capable of having Congress. Sidney Gryce blanched at my mouthing such an obscenity, but steeled himself to continue.
Are you familiar with that fascinating novel, I Was a Sultan's Slave, by Lydia Lovely?
This was not a conversation I had expected to be having with any adult male when I had read the book surreptitiously with Maudie Glass in the old barn at the end of Wood Lane in Parbold. Yes, I have read it, I confessed, half expecting to be scolded.
Good.
He put his pencil away.
Then you will be familiar with page 76, where one of the 314 unsavoury incidents is described in lurid detail, namely the seduction of the Sultan's 19th wife, the voluptuous 19-year-old Fatima, by,
he jerked his right elbow towards me, Abdul the Eunuch, I remembered. Maudie and I had been appalled and thrilled by that episode. But surely it is a work of fiction, and rather overheated at that. In fact, I am surprised that you are familiar with it. Sidney Gryce blinked rapidly.
It is what our filthy Gallic neighbours call a Roman aclef.
Two halfpennies appeared in his left hand.
A true story in which the names of the characters have been changed. Miss Lydia Lovely is now the wife of a prominent banker and Grand Master of the Ancient Order of Shrivers.
I do not suppose such a revelation would do his reputation much good.
Not in quarters with whom his business is likely to prosper,
he agreed. I do not want to belabour this, I began hesitantly, but surely a castrated man cannot achieve—
Clearly he cannot produce seed,
Mr. G. completed my thought hastily.
But the seminal vesicles, prostrate glands, and bulbar urethral glands can and do produce quantities of fluid. Lord!
He fiddled with his cravat.
I have not had such an awkward conversation since I had to explain to my mother how she came to be gravid with child, id est me.
I gaped. Did she really not know?
She thought she had swallowed me in a rock pool.
I went back to my chair to recover from a coughing fit. If only we had the names of those patients, I managed to say at last.
Hospital records are scant, and their filing muddled at the best of times,
Sidney Gryce told me.
But let us consider, apart from his mutilation, what kind of man we are looking for.
His voice would not be high, if he had already reached maturity, I observed, though I do not suppose he would have had much facial hair. I did not add, like you, for my guardian regarded his smooth skin as an evolutionary advance.
Do make an effort to say something less obvious,
Mr. G. rattled his coins impatiently. You are always telling me not to ignore the obvious, I retorted.
Not to the exclusion of all other thought, he huffed.
Well, he must be well educated to make such a pun on the doctor's name.
But not wealthy enough to be in a private room,
my guardian pointed out, quite obviously, I thought.
And,
his expression became even more sour than usual,
why do you persist in wearing that same pair of boots? You will have ploughed through my floor within 19 years at this rate.
They are very comfortable. I excused myself with a guilty glance at the scratched boards. And the next time we see the cobbler,
I can get him to hammer it in properly.
He cannot be much good at his craft, my guardian remarked. That gentleman in the green paisley waistcoat, the two-tone cravat, the pinstriped grey trousers and black side-button boots, was complaining about a repair he had done.
He even dropped. I stopped, and Sidney Grice looked at me quizzically.
Go on, he urged.
His hammer. My words were hardly audible to my own ears as I tried to reconstruct in my mind what had seemed to be a trivial conversation. He charged me 5 pence, I remembered.
And you paid him that for banging in a nail?
Mr. G was incredulous. Even worse, I said, I had nothing smaller than a 6 pence.
Mr. G pfft, and needless to say, he had no change.
No, I agreed automatically. And he said, Oh, thanks, miss, you're an oops-a-daisy. He watched me keenly.
At what point in the proceedings?
After I had handed him the money, but, and this is the odd bit, he said oops, before he dropped the hammer.
You are sure of that?
Positive. I thought the act seemed contrived at the time, but then the flower girl who stands on the corner said he was always doing silly things for a laugh, and I thought no more about it.
Until? Mr. G asked eagerly.
I do not think he said, oops-a-daisy, at all, I pondered.
Then why did you waste your breath and my time telling me that he did?
Sidney Grice hurled the coins away, but I did not hear them strike anything. It was his pronunciation. I could almost hear the bootmaker's voice. I think he said, ops, and then tried to cover it up.
For once, my ignorance is more profound than yours. What does ops mean other than a sickening abbreviation for operations, or an acronym for the Obliteration of Penguins Society, of which I am a member?
What have you got against penguins?
Nothing very much, except for their nasty jauntiness,
he assured me.
It is just that I am of the opinion that the fewer species with which we have to share this ludicrously cluttered planet, the better.
Ops was the wife of Saturn and the Greek goddess of plenty. I struggled to get back to the subject. And munificence. He was saying that I was generous.
A smooth-faced man with a knowledge of Greek mythology,
Mr. G said grimly.
And you told me that your shoddy and overpriced boot repair was not relevant to any of our cases.
I did not think it was, I protested.
What is the point of not thinking that?
He demanded angrily. What are you writing? I asked, as he printed something on a blank sheet of paper.
A telegram.
My guardian brought his temper back under control just as quickly as he had lost it.
To Chief Inspector Pound. He should be settling into his new office by now.
Oh, I said. You know about his promotion? And I said a silent prayer that he had not pulled strings to help get it, for I wanted George to ascend on his own merit.
Of course, he said. In fact, I recommended.
He shot me a glance.
That he should not be given it.
But why? I demanded indignantly.
Because he will spend more time in meetings and writing memoranda than doing what he is occasionally not too bad at, for a policeman.
Mr. G cupped his left palm, and his two halfpennies fell one at a time into it.
Investigating crimes.
This seemed as good an opportunity as ever. Now that he is a chief inspector,
in the morning, my godfather ploughed on, we shall take breakfast, bicker about something irrelevant, and seek out this irritating tradesman to see if he can explain himself.
We can try, I mumbled, and he turned sharply.
What now? Why are you looking like a bloodhound caught ingesting his master's slipper of tobacco?
Nobody keeps their tobacco in their slippers.
Silly people do. Explain your discomfort.
I am not sure, I said, but I think he might have realized he had given himself away. I hung my head. He has probably gone into hiding by now.
I hope you are right, March.
He rested Charlie Peace's patella on a diagram of the internal workings of his ladder stick.
For you can be sure of one thing. He has not been loitering in Grosvenor Square for the fresh air.
Lucy, I cried.
Ring for tea,
he said nonchalantly. Is that all you care about? Sidney Grice took out a fresh sheet of paper. He will not make an appearance at night. That would attract too much attention, especially as his face is known in the square. In the meantime... His new gunmetal pen was on his desk, but he picked up his patent self-filler. I shall send her a telegram. And, as Sidney Grice began to print, "Beware the bootmaker," Molly trundled in. "Listen carefully," her employer instructed, and she cocked an ear rather as Spirit did when he was confiding in her. "You will take these telegrams immediately. Do not even change into your outdoor boots. Your mission is urgent. Do you understand?" Molly crossed her fingers and her eyes.
"Telegrams immediately, which means urgent. Indoor boots, urgent, which means immediately,"
she recited with such concentration that I wanted to give her a ripple of applause. "Money." Mr. G rammed a cotton pouch into her hand. "Go." And Molly was off. I had seen racehorses make slower starts, but they were the ones I had money on.